Good morning. I'm Katie Michael, if you don't know me. So before we start, I want to hear from you. What do you think of as a sacred place? What's a place that's sacred for you? Just shout it out. Or sacred for someone else.
Medicine Wheel in Wyoming.
Yellowstone River.
Quietness and peace.
Lots of nature in this community. Not surprised. Living where we do. Well, just getting us thinking there. So, I want to start with two quotes that I came across while preparing this sermon. The first, a sacred place, first of all, is a defined place, a space distinguished from other spaces. The rituals that people either practice at, or place, or direct toward it, mark its sacredness and differentiate it from other defined spaces. To understand the character of such places, Jonathan Z. Smith has suggested a helpful metaphor of sacred space as a focusing lens. As meaningful space, sacred space encompasses a wide variety of very different kinds of places. It includes places that are constructed for religious purposes, such as temples or churches, and places that are religiously interpreted, such as mountains or rivers. It includes spaces that can be entered physically, as the outer geography of a holy land, imaginatively, as the inner geography of the body in tantric yoga, or visually, as the space of the mandala. Sacred space does not even exclude non-sacred space. For the same place may be both sacred and non-sacred in different respects. I know, it's out of order. That's not how that sentence finishes. Yes, luckily they have numbers. There we go. A house is a functional space. But in its construction, its design, or the rites within it, it may be endowed with religious meaning. A shrine that is the focus of religious activity on certain occasions may be ignored at other times. In short, a sacred place comes into being when it is interpreted as a sacred space. And from the book Dark Green Religion, Nature, Spirituality, and the Planetary Future, contemporary religious studies scholars would generally say that whether a religion's sacred space is built or natural, it's human activity that consecrates those places and makes them sacred. So, today's topic originally came about because we thought we might be in our new building by this time. However, while we are still playing Nomad, I think the topic is relevant and might help us when we do move to our permanent home. Growing up, I attended the Unitarian Universalist Society of Greater Springfield, and on Sunday mornings we went to the meeting house. It was a Frank Lloyd Wright-style building. In graduate school, I taught religious education at the First Unitarian Church of Oakland, and attended the First Congregational Church of Oakland, both large, impressive buildings. I also went a few times to Masjid Al Iman, a storefront mosque across the street from a grocery store. For the last few years, as you may well know, I have been a member here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bozeman, where we have been attending services at the meeting place, whether that be the Senior Center, Eagle Mount, Christus Collegium, or for a brief period, our church that we will be returning to. The name changed, but there was something that remained constant throughout my experiences. Be it a temple, an ashram, a cathedral, a church, a meeting house, these are all places that are set aside for some purpose. It's not the name of the place that makes it special, though. Today, I'd like to look at two different kinds of sacred spaces, and then offer some thoughts about how this may inform our lives. The idea of sacred space is an ancient one. For many religions, sacred places are ones where important things have happened in their creation stories or religious histories. In Islam, the most holy place is the Kaaba in Mecca. The Kaaba is a cube-shaped building, roughly 43 feet tall, with sides 36 and 42 feet wide. The structure is covered in black fabric that has gold Arabic scripture embroidered onto it. The Kaaba is the destination of the Hajj, or pilgrimage, that Muslims are required, if able, to take at least once during their lifetimes. You may have seen images of it with thousands and thousands of people circulating around it. The Kaaba itself predates Islam, and at one point housed 360 statues of deities. It has been thought of as the point where the holy can be accessed. In the east wall of the Kaaba, there is a black stone, believed by some to have fallen from earth to indicate to Adam and Eve where to build an altar. One interpretation of the Kaaba by Islamic scholars is that the shrine was a place of worship for angels before the creation of man. Later, the temple was built on this location by Adam and Eve and was lost during the flood of Noah's times, but was finally rebuilt by Abraham and Ishmael. Bodh Gaya in India is considered by many adherents to Buddhism to be their most holy site. Gautama Buddha is said to have attained enlightenment while sitting under the Bodhi tree, located in Bodh Gaya. At this site of his purported enlightenment, the Mahabodhi Temple now stands. Every year, many Buddhists make pilgrimages from all over the world to visit and meditate at this temple. The Temple Mount is the holiest site in Judaism, which regards it as the place where God's divine presence is manifest more than any other place. According to rabbinic sages whose debates produced the Talmud, it was from here that the world expanded into its present form, and where God gathered the dust to create the first human. So these are examples of the first kind of religious space, a place that has historical and religious significance. All these places, offer worshipers a connection with their history and their concept of the divine or the holy. Visiting such sites can help them experience and deepen a person's relationship to their religious traditions and practices. To quote from a website on sacred spaces, the author writes, "An emphasis on sacred space is found in most world religions and traditions. Places they set aside as holy, they use for worship, prayer, and important rituals. The name for this space differs according to faith, but the point remains the same. It is a place where the believers can encounter the divine in a very special and powerful way." So this is the second type of space, the sacred space created or set aside for the activities of a religion. When one enters a temple, one enters a marked-off space in which, at least in principle, nothing is accidental. Everything, at least potentially, is of significance. These spaces, as the quote said, are where believers encounter the divine. Often the art and architecture of these buildings are created to help access this, depending on the theology of the group using it. For Catholics, a church might be full of icons and stained glass that inspire a connection to God. The symbol of Jesus on a cross, an image of sacrifice and salvation. Or a church might be austere in the style of the Protestant Reformation, where theology holds that ornaments and rituals are idolatrous. As Smith suggested in the quote I offered earlier, these types of spaces are focusing lenses. When one enters these places, there is a change in perception. The space itself, because of its name, its purpose, or its intention, calls us to shift awareness to what is important in our lives. These places can be both sacred and non-sacred. A solstice gathering may be held in a clearing in the woods. At the time of celebration and the ritual, a circle may be cast. An intention set that the clearing has now become sacred and is used as a location to worship, though after the ceremony, it may return to simply being a clearing in the woods. some might hike through or picnic at. So being UU, what are these places for us? When I was in college, I took a trip to Boston to visit the then UUA headquarters on Beacon Street. It felt in some ways like a pilgrimage for me to see where the leaders of our denomination worked. Other UUs traveled to places like Transylvania, tracing the heritage of our early Unitarianism. While ours may not be a religion of doctrine, we still have places that signify our origins and our principles. Maybe in hundreds of years, the corner of 25th and Villard will be a sacred site to the Bozeman UUs of the future, if by then they've gotten their occupancy certificate. Most importantly, at least for our congregation right now, I think we should look at the second kind of sacred space. Whether we are a society at a meeting house or a fellowship at a church, what does it mean for us to connect with the divine? Divinity, sacred, holy, spirit of life, spirit of love. Theists and atheists both find something worthwhile in our meeting places. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Our language might be different, but there is a shared experience that sets our gatherings apart from the rest of our lives. We may be encountering the divine through a renewed call to social justice. It may be through the comfort and companionship of community. We may be called by music or words to connect more deeply with ourselves and our purpose in life. Who we invite in and how we welcome them is one way we can connect with our UU principles. Upholding the inherent worth and dignity of all people and the interconnected web of existence leads us to certain behaviors and ways of being. Simply entering and being warmly greeted without judgment can be the lens that focuses us on what is important. While being a mobile congregation, we have become adept at making sacred spaces available to us anywhere we go. None of these places that I have talked about today are really special or sacred on their own. It is only through the meaning given to them by people that they gain importance. We know that we can create a sacred space almost anywhere, be it the senior center, a fire pit up at Highlight, or an office above a gas station, by shifting our focus to what calls us to be together. However, though the spirit of this congregation may live on inside of us while we are apart, our physical space is gone. This will be changing soon. Soon, when we leave a Sunday service, our place will not leave with us. It will remain as a beacon for other seekers. In this way, our building will become a member of this congregation. It will give us shelter and permanence. It will allow us to broaden our message and our reach. It will help us invite the stranger in. We will no longer have to wait for us to all be gathered to create a space that moves us. It will be there, waiting, to live up to its and our potential. Having been nomadic for the life of the fellowship and soon moving into a new building, I imagine a lot of us have been to the building before, whether last year, before the renovations, or during one of the tours given as completion approaches. What does our church say about what we believe? There are rooms for religious education because children are an important part of who we are. There is a space for community activities because being together to celebrate and mourn are important. The building is handicap accessible, while required by law, I would venture to say it would be anyway, because we strive to include all people. The ground will be landscaped to reflect the beauty we see in nature and the natural world. Our building was a dream before it was ever a reality. Each of our imaginations have given it life. At Reverend Duffy's installation a few weeks ago, Reverend Shelley Page shared with those who were gathered a story about her daughter, who had lived a nomadic life, traveling, living in tents, nothing big or permanent. This daughter and her partner had recently bought a house, a large one at that, and started to put down roots. They created a space in their home to invite strangers and friends alike to share meals and ideas. Reverend Page offered this as something to think about as we shift from a nomadic family-sized congregation to a pastoral congregation with our own church. I hope that as we move into our new building, we can find ways to make it sacred in our intention and in our actions. So may it be.